Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Change the world from what it used to be.
Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
That's right. Wake up, everybody, to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History. Today is the 18th day of November, 2023. And what we're going to do today is have a real interesting dialogue as we discuss the theme, our story, our movement, and our history. That's right. We'd like to have a candid discussion on our history, our movement, and our story. And we will invite you to join us by dialing in at 818-337-0016. And you know, one of the things we're going to do at Missing Pages of History is to give our people the kind of information that will help them make correct analysis of their present conditions, so we can make a better plan for the future of our people. So we'd like to encourage you to call in and join us. We have an interesting special guest, and we're going to deal with some subject matters as it relates to African people around the world, from Haiti to West Africa. We're going to talk about some countries that our people need to be aware of the present realities of our people conditions, how they relate to us, and how we can participate. So that's going to be the direction for this particular program. And like always on MPH Radio, we can start off with the whole opening of giving you something to think about, followed by today, we have breaking news from Susie, theme, our story, our movement, our history, and then we have we will close out with a message to the community from Brother Alex. So right now, what we're going to do is just give you something to think about. Now, when we talk about giving you something to think about, we're going to talk about the concept of freedom. What is freedom? Freedom is something that's often talked about. Hundreds of millions of people have died over and continue to die over this concept. And we would like to just give you an idea in terms of what freedom means to us from this conception, which is freedom is having the ability and means to control those necessities for life. Let me repeat that. Freedom is having the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. Think about that. How does that concept fit into your understanding of freedom? At this point in time, we're going to do a little special feature called Breaking News. And we now will bring in Sister Susie. She has some important news in which she would like to share with our listening audience. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. I'd like to just give you a couple of articles of what's happening in the world today. On November the 6th, we had Haiti lawyers file a lawsuit against the illegitimate Haiti government for requesting invasion into Haiti in violation of Haiti Constitution. On November the 6th, Ezelia Dante, Haiti Lawyer Leadership Network, and Evo Van and actions of organizations motivated for Haiti law. The Haitian Constitution. The Haitian Constitution prohibits in its Article 263 the existence of other armed corps on the national territory. Haiti has had more than 10 different international interventions in the last decades. Each brought more disenfranchisement for the Haitian people, left more arms, more violence, and more human rights violations, including contaminated UN soldiers killing more than 10,000 Haitians, with poisoning Haiti's waterways and making 1 million Haitians sick. No reparations has ever been made for these international crimes. Ariel Henry and his government are not duly elected and have no constitutional mandate or legal capacity to request foreign troops on Haiti's soil. This is a high crime under the Haitian Constitution. The Haitian lawsuit proposes two solutions: that the international community and de facto Haiti government have at their disposal to counter the paramilitary death squads without bringing more violence and foreign military into Haiti. Enforce United Nations Resolution 2653, which calls on UN member states to stop the arms trafficking coming from foreign lands into Haiti for use by the right-wing paramilitaries. These death squads heavily depend on arms trafficking, primarily from the United States and, to a lesser extent, the Dominican Republic. Haiti does not manufacture weapons. Also, compliance by these powers, the UN Resolution 2653 is a legal Haiti solution rather than the imperial solution that violates Haiti's sovereignty. These death squads are financed by the wealthy white Syrian Lebanese Haiti who remain invisible to the media. Most are already sanctioned by Canada, the United States, and the UN for financing gangs and thus for financing death, terror, and murder in Haiti. The Ariel Henry government and members of his PHTK political party have also been named by UN reports for financing this violence. Instead of violating the Haiti and Kenya constitutions, the lawyers who filed this case in Haiti proposed that the de facto Haiti authorities, along with the governments of Canada, the United States, and the Dominican Republic, take prosecutorial actions and mobilize their enforcement authorities. They recommend not just imposing toothless sanctions on these wealthy businessmen and Haitian politicians for their role in financing terror, dispossession, rape, and murder, but call for issuing arrests and warrants and financing and promptly apprehending these criminal businessmen and financiers of terror in Haiti against the impoverished Haitian people. These two solutions are the Haiti-led answers to support the human rights and sovereignty of Haitian people, not illegal invasions to uphold imperial plunders and an illegal Ariel Henry government. And that came from attorneys Evil Fan Fan in Haiti and attorney Evil Dante in the United States. And this was a release on November the 15th, 2013. Okay, and
we'd like to thank Susie for her breaking news. And at this point in time, what we're going to do on MPH Radio is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will continue discussion on Haiti as we begin to address our theme today, our story, our movement, our history with Sister Eugenia Charles. So don't you go nowhere. We're going to fill in our missing pages of history. We'll be right back.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who
Yes, we'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. Yes, we say, find your strength in the Almighty people. Welcome back to MPH Radio on the 18th of November, 2023. We will now begin to entertain our theme today, which is our story, our movement, and our history. And what a greater place to start when we talk about this question of a story, a movement, and a history, is the mighty people of Haiti. And with that, we can bring in our sister, Eugenia Charles, who is Haitian. She is a freedom fighter. She is a media personality. And she wears many hats because it calls for us to do many things. But right now, we would like to welcome her to MPH Radio. And Sister Eugenia, we would like for you to tell our listening audience, introduce yourself in terms of who is Sister Eugenia Charles and the work that you do.
Greetings to you, my brother. Greetings to all the listeners. Greetings to all the staff who are working with you to put this show together. I want to first salute the ancestors whose shoulders that I sit on to be able to address with you today the history, our story as a Haitian people. Today is November 18, 2023, marking 220 years since the Great Battle of Vétières on November 18, 1803. Talking about who is Eugenia Charles, that is the hardest task you've asked me to do, because I believe the work that has to be done for our people is more important. To push the struggle forward. But for the listeners who are listening to me for the first time, I'm Eugenia Charles. I am a native of Haiti. I am the daughter of two farmers from the countryside in Haiti, in the southwest part of Haiti. I've been in the U.S. for too many years. I've dedicated my life to push the struggle of my people forward because our ancestors gave their lives to leave us a free nation. And I think we have a responsibility to carry on that challenge. I'm a mother of two, and I've been with WPFW for, close to 25 years now. So my program has been on the air for nearly 40 years. I used to co-host it with my dear colleague, Jean-Yves Pointijou, who passed. So I carry on the baton to make sure that the people's work is getting done and that we carry on the struggle. But today, what's more important is to remember the men and women who left us this country. It took 14 years of fight to liberate Haiti. So I want to pay special tribute to our emperor, the founding father of Haiti, General Jean-Jacques Dessalines. I want to pay respect to Capois Lamor, the man who got on the horse and carry on, and all the other soldiers who took part in that battle while Dessalines was standing on top of that mountain providing leadership and guidance to the soldiers who went to face Bonaparte's army and took on that army and said, you know what, this is our nation and this is the last battle and we will not come into the new year being enslaved and shackled under the French torturous army. So today it's a special day for us Haitians. It is a special day to remember the sacrifice that our founding fathers, our founding mothers, the Haitian revolutions, when many think about it, they think about all the men who participated in the battle. But the army itself was comprised of men and women and young people. So they all participated in their own way in the struggles. And some of the women that are well known to the Haitian revolutions are Toptoya Aptaraya Toyamantu. She was the person who delivered Jean-Jacques Dessalines. who trained Desalin to become the great leader that he became to allow us to become a free nation. I want to pay tribute to Sanit Belair. I want to pay tribute to Marie-Jeanne, who was the chief of our Secret Service in the Indigenous Army, and she was also a bodyguard for Jean-Jacques Dessalines when he was assassinated in 1806. That was the one time she did not accompany him to the meeting, and that's the moment they were able to assassinate him. So the Haitian Revolution's that battle on November 18th allowed us to become an independent nation and tells Napoleon's army that they had to leave Haiti. That was the end of it all. And they packed up their soldiers and their ships and left the shore. He believed Dessalines was going to assassinate him, but that wasn't the intention. So Dessalines sent him back to Europe to send a message letting them know that they should never set foot again on Haitian soil. So our Haitian constitutions, even from the pre-independence with Toussaint Louverture, and who got the first independence in 1801 during the time Haiti was being called Saint-Domingue, that constitution calls for no foreigners to own lands in Haiti. So when Dessalines took over and liberated us on November, with that final battle in November 18th, the constitutions that arrived, that he left for us, the blueprints of Haiti from May 20, 1805, that constitution made it very clear that no foreign individual should be owning lands in Haiti. No foreign troop should be setting foot on Haitian soil. That was the solemn oath that was taken on January 1st, 1804, when Dessalines made that speech. All of the generals who fought in the war to liberate Haiti, it was a solemn oath that we, the people, my great-grandparents, our ancestors, took an oath to make sure no foreign troop, no occupation will be on our soil. So today, as we looked at 220 years later, we are looking at a cumulative 108 years of U.S. imperialist occupation on Haitian soil. And we've seen recently during the month of October, on October 2nd, the U.N. voted a resolution to bring multinational forces in Haiti. And unfortunately, government has selected Kenya to be used as the vessel, the black face, to bring another occupation on Haitian force soil. I want to pay tribute to the colleagues who in Kenya is educating the people on the grounds, who are pushing forward, and Attorney Akoa, who is pushing the case, the constitutional, Kenyan constitution that is being violated by Mr. President Ruto, who agrees to side with the imperialist nations to bring forces in Haiti. And the court so far has put an injunction on the process up until January 6, 2024. But we know that the President Ruto himself have asked the Kenyan parliament to vote on the situation, and they voted in favor of it. I'm still in the belief that our ancestors, who fought so hard to allow Haiti to be where it is, will stand in their spirits in every shape and form to ensure that this other levels of occupation does not land on Haitian soil. The situation that we are dealing with in Haiti, it's very dire. It is a man-made insecurity situation. It is a situation created by the imperialist military occupying forces to push their weapons, to land drugs on our soil, those things that we do not need because they destroy society. The levels of Haitians that are being killed on a regular basis, the number of Haitians that are being kidnapped on a regular basis. Haitians lawyers need to begin pulling themselves together to look at filing cases, genocide cases, against the U.S. government, against different members of the UN Security Council against French, against Canada, the people who were pushing for the forces. But if you look at the weapons themselves that are in the hands of the so-called bandits, 95% of the weapons are coming from the United States. And that is information put out by a report that was drafted by UNDOC. Anybody can go online and look up UNDOC recent report on Haiti. That is an institution that is part of the United Nations that's done an extensive report tracking where the purchase of the weapons are coming from. These are weapons that are coming from here. And the resolutions that your colleague spoke of in the news brief, Resolution 2653, is a resolution that was passed last year at the UN Security Council calling on members of the UN to institute sanctions and to limit the flow of weapons from their homes into Haiti. So given that the majority of the weapons are coming from the United States, one will expect the U.S. as being a member of the UN Security Council will be the first country looking at implementing that resolution and limiting access to those weapons that are being purchased here in the U.S., including here within the D.C. area. And the shipments are taking place from Florida. The U.S. have enough manpower and technological resources at their ports in Florida to track those weapons to prevent them from traveling to Haiti. So the killings of regular Haitians on a regular basis, the kidnapping, can be stopped if the U.S. wanted to help with that. And yes, we are looking at a de facto government that's been put into office by a tweet from Madame Lalume and the rest of the core group in Haiti. The man was supposed to leave office after 3 months after the assassinations of former President Jovenel Moïse. And even with that, we are dealing with a lot of issues in Haiti that need to be dealt into. But at the end of the day is that the occupation, the U.S. imperialist occupations need to end in the country. The U.S. government must stop meddling into Haitians' affairs. Right now, Haiti is really placed under a protectorship. If we go back to 2003, when they've had created this Canadian initiatives in Ottawa to determine to place Haiti under trusteeship where U.S., Canada, and France will have the monopoly over the decision-making process, political process in Haiti. And since then, remember, they had coup d'Aristide in 2004. So since then, Canada, the U.S., and France have really been the people deciding who is being elected president, who is being elected senators, who is being elected deputies. And they look for people who have been involved in corruption, people who have some kind of layer of shadow over their head, because it is easier for them to manipulate these individuals to do deeds that will favor, quote-unquote, U.S. interests. And right now, when we look at Port-au-Prince, Port-au-Prince becomes a war zone. People are not able to leave their home. Children are unable to go to school. A lot of people have been forced out of their home and become homeless. People who are on the countryside, they're not able to enter Port-au-Prince because of the level of gang that are placed in a major intersection, making it very difficult for cars to commute, where the gang themselves are forcing local people to have to pay money if they have to get through. And sometimes when they don't have the money to pay, they're being killed for that. So I think here in the, as brothers and sisters here in the United States, we have to look at what is happening in Haiti, not just Haiti, but as something that is happening against Black people. When we look at our situation here in the United States, for all the places they are calling so-called the ghettos, the level of weapons that is being thrown into our community, the levels of drugs that is being poured into our communities, the hospitals that are being privatized, limiting access to quality health care here in our own community, those are the same challenges that Haitians are facing in the country. the different drugs that are being tested on our population, the heavy policing in our community, the level of racism to policing here in the United States. So a force that is being sent to Haiti is not going to protect the Haitian populations or provide security for the Haitian population. These forces that are going forward, article published in Haitian newspapers shows that there are U.S. rice production companies in Louisiana who have been losing money because they are not able to cheaply transport their rice into Haiti. They are looking at this multinational force to come in to help guard the quote-unquote port to facilitate the delivery of U.S. rice. Mind you, the Haitian rice production, local production, was completely destroyed by Bill Clinton, taken over by U.S. rice. So now we are consuming a lot of rice from the United States. Our rice that we used to produce back home was organic. It was healthier, and the level of disease that is being thrown in the country is extremely hard for the population, and knowing that we don't have sufficient doctors and hospitals to provide care for the population. So when you hear Haiti as being an unstabilized country, a country with high level of violence, you have to take a moment to sit and think and look at the money, follow the money, follow the weapons, the people who is controlling the cell of the weapon, the people who is benefiting from the weapon cells, the people who are benefiting from the insecurity in Haiti, all these folks that need to be stopped. And here in the U.S., we can do something. Election is coming up. We all should register to vote. And I know we have issues with limiting black voters here in the United States, but we need to be proactive on electing individuals who will push policies that will support our cause. So the work has to be done in Haiti and here in the United States to do that as well. I don't know if you have any questions for me.
Yes, I can open up to our audience. They've been waiting very patiently. They may have some questions. But before we go to that segment, Sister Eugenia, I would like for you to talk a little bit about Haiti in terms of its personality, in terms of its revolution, how it has impacted African people in the Western Hemisphere and throughout the world. Most people don't know the historical contributions, how Haiti have viewed themselves as a people who understood that wherever African people were, there was a part of them. And if they came back home to Haiti, they would be protected. There would be no more slavery. So can you just talk a little bit about the gratitude and the history of Haiti in terms of understanding that their struggle has never been isolated from other African people's struggle?
Most definitely, Haiti has been a beacon. And for Dessalines, when he was fighting for liberating Haitians and liberating blacks in Haiti, he wasn't looking at just liberating blacks in Haiti itself. Dessalines wanted to end slavery at the very core in Africa and throughout the entire globe. So the objective was to free Haiti first and then take that to the rest of the globe. Haiti, after our independence, and we can look at our contributions to the United States here. Remember, there are Haitian soldiers, Al-Christophe, a lot of other soldiers came here and participated in the Battle of Savannah to help liberate the United States. So the objective was our soldiers will come help the U.S. become independent. Thereafter, because they are an independent nation, they will help the Haitians free themselves. Unfortunately, the United States decided to go against Haiti because they had a full-fledged slavery going on here in the United States. They wanted to keep their slaves, and they wanted to continue making the money off the back. So once the Haitians started fighting for freedom, they saw Haiti as a threat because they did not want the slave here in the United States to follow what the Haitians were doing. But it was very unfortunate for them because that concept has already taken root. So Haiti did not only fight to become an independent nation, we also helped Greece, we helped many countries in Latin America to become independent as well, and also all of the countries in Africa who later became independent, they follow and study the tactics and strategies of Jean-Jacques Dessalines in becoming a free nation. A lot of the movement we built here to the civil rights movement, many of those leaders looked at the Haitian revolutions. When you look at Garvey, Malcolm X, you look at Martin Luther King, all of these individuals saw the importance that the Haitian revolutions had played in helping Black people to identify themselves. So on January 1st, when Dessalines declared us an independent nation, he declared Haiti as a safe haven for Black people, oppressed people from across the globe. Anybody who was being oppressed, who set foot in Haiti, became a free man, a free woman. After we became an independent nation, Dessalines wrote a letter and sent it to Jefferson, asking Jefferson to purchase the head of every enslaved Black person here in America. And that was a big offense to the Jefferson's government. That's one of the other reasons why they put an embargo against Haiti, limiting commerce, limiting access. And then later on, you see how the French government themselves, after they assassinated Dessalines in 1825, under the Boyer government, Haiti was forced to pay 150 million francs in gold to the French government as a way to remain an independent nation. Nothing that we are seeing today as a Black people to be able to walk around and say that we are free Black men and women, we owe that gratitude to Jean-Jacques Dessalines and all the other founding fathers and founding mothers who fought to liberate Haiti. We do not get taught this particular information in school. A lot of us have to go learn it ourselves if you're not directly linked to Haiti. But it is important to see Haiti may be challenged, maybe facing a lot of difficulties at the moment. Haiti is being used as an example to ensure that Black people don't see Haiti as an example that they can pursue to become self-sufficient as a people and economically as a valuable asset to their own race. So when we are doing those fights, it's important for Blacks here in America and across the globe to pull together. When we're looking at some of the countries in Africa that are taking steps to liberate themselves from the crunch of the French, those are steps that are still following the concept that Jean-Jacques Dessalines had put forward in us becoming not only free, but free mentally, free economically, in getting access to lands where our people will be able to produce and provide for themselves. So today, Haiti is in the condition that it is because it dares to be free. It dares to represent the Black race. It dares to say that it will stand against the system of slavery. Today, even if we don't have the shackles on our feet, a lot is being done through the education system. A lot is being done to keep ourselves mentally shackled. So we have a responsibility to look at the work that Dessalines has done, the work that Christophe has done, the work that Capualamo has done, the work that Abdakaya Toyamantu did to bring this nation forward and utilize those tactics to help us move ahead as a nation.
Okay, my sister, what we're going to do right now, we're going to open up our phone lines to our listeners. They can dial 818-337-0016. Please hit 1. Please hit 1. And if you have a question or a comment, now, with your comment, we can actually please limit your comment to less than 2 minutes, please. So we're going to open up our phone lines right now, my sister, as we look at this question of our story, our movement, our history, as it relates to Haiti for you. So let's go to our call. Brother Alex, welcome to MPH Radio. Your comment or question, Brother Alex.
Well, thank you, Brother Lee, for giving me an opportunity to even speak to Mrs. Charles. Mrs. Charles, you have given us some information here that is just mind-blowing because you're talking about all the things that we need to concentrate on today, and that is especially when you mentioned about voting and how important that is, but also how to govern ourselves and to have businesses and also to have commerce coming in and trading, because so many countries, yes, they are being landlocked and to not being able to get their goods and services out. So as long as there are other countries that are oppressing you to get anywhere, and like you said, Haiti is an example now to the world to say this is the worst of having black countries free. But if you have done everything you could to hold them down, what do you expect? So my question to you is, what can we as Americans here do to help the country of Haiti? We give billions and billions of dollars all over the world today. But what can we as black Americans give to Haiti to show solidarity in the views that you've expressed today? And I thank you.
Thank you, my brother, for sharing your thought and concern. And that I think the first things that we black Americans can do is realize that the fight that Haiti is fighting is a fight for the black race, is not a fight for Haiti alone. Because a free and liberated Haiti becomes a free and liberated black race. So we got to stick together and fight for the black race. The first thing you can do here in the U.S. is ensure that the person you are voting understand the black race struggle. Because here, if you have good hospitals, you have good leaders, you have good doctors, you have good engineer, and you've got the skill here, you can share it with the Haitians. You have to ensure that the people you vote are not following the status quo, the imperialist military occupation force, that when they get into office, their first objective is not to vote for another occupied government in Haiti. We, to be a liberated nation, we need people, black people, to understand that liberation is for all of us. And we cannot see the Haitian struggle as though it is in Haiti. It does not concern me. It concerns your children. It concerns you. It concerns everyone in our community. We must see it as a black race struggle. Right now, you can tell the White House to move their knee off Haiti's neck. You can tell them to stop their unilateral multinational forces that they are sending to Haiti. We do not need that. You can tell your congressional people the same thing, to stop voting legislation that is putting a chokehold on the Haitian populations and end the occupation. The Haitian Americans who have an organization called NEONS, they wrote letters to the Biden administration letting him know that they are against the multinational force, they are against the occupations, and they want them to release the Haitian people from the chokehold that is keeping Ariel Henry into office. Ariel Henry is sitting in office simply because the U.S. government wants him in office. He facilitates the U.S. to gain access. Right now, as I'm talking to you, the Kenyan government asked for the United Nations to provide more money and training. The last statement that came out from the Minister of Interior from Kenya, they were asking for $600 million to be able to deploy their 1,000 police force to Haiti, and they want to see training before that is being done. The budget for the Haitian National Police and the Haitian military together is less than $20 million. The U.S. and the U.N. folks are estimating that they need close to $400 million to bring the multinational force into Haiti. So you can send a letter. You can make a statement. You can hold your elected official accountable and ask them, if you truly want to help Haiti, then help the Haitian National Police, help the Haitian military. The two institution budget is less than $20 million. So how is that you are looking for $400 million elsewhere to bring forces from other countries when you can provide the support if you really wanted to help them to resolve the gang situation? That is one clear and simple thing. that can be done. So people, with your pen, when you are organizing in your community, make a call and remember that Haiti is there. We need that support. Let these folks know that this issue can be resolved if they put their pens, if they put their words in the right directions. You can ask the U.S. government to stop the flow of guns from the U.S. into Haiti. That will help us a great deal.
All right. Thank you, my sister. Let's go to our next caller. Caller 6029. Caller 6029. Welcome to MPH Radio. Question or comment?
Yeah. I want to, first of all, I just want to thank the sister for a comprehensive analysis in terms of the African struggle. That's indeed very important that our people throughout the diaspora understand, besides contributions Haiti has contributed to the world. Now, having said that, one of the things, you know, I like to talk about briefly is that, you know, when we talk about the kind of international injustices that are inflicted upon Haitians, there are specific individuals in the context of Haitian history who played a great part in terms of help assisting those infractions being committed against the Haitian people. In particular, I'm talking about Emmanuel Toto Constant. Now, this individual who was the head of FRAP did some very horrible things in terms of, you know, liquidating or actually killing, you know, thousands of Haitian people in terms of ensuring, you know, that the powers that be remain in power. Now, my question to you, sister, is that, you know, apparently this guy, Toto Constant, was finally deported after many decades in the United States. He was deported back to Haiti. Now, my question to you is that if, in fact, he was deported back to Haiti, what is his current status? Because one of the things I'm concerned about is because he has a very close relationship with the CIA. And my concern is that, in fact, that his trial will be whitewashed, in which, you know, he would actually evade charges. So can you elaborate a little bit on terms of currently what's going on with this guy, Toto Constant?
It's quite interesting you ask these questions because the U.S., I'm sure many of you are familiar with School of the Americas. The U.S. will train people to go do their deeds in Haiti. And Emmanuel Toto Constant, yes, is a member of FRAP. He was trained and paid by the U.S. government. He was allowed to come here into the United States. He was involved in some housing scheme in New York. Then he was incarcerated. He was deported back to Haiti after many requests and years of serving time. When Toto Constant arrived in Haiti, he landed in Haiti during the Joseph Michel Martelly government. Joseph Michel Martelly is also someone who was a member of FRAP, who was trained in the Haitian army. He was part of the Ninja group. So Joseph Michel Martelly was the president before Jovenel Moïse. He was handpicked by former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. When the election took place after the earthquake, when Préval realized that Martelly was not the person who won and the Clintons wanted Martelly to be named president, they threatened to send a plane to pick up Préval if he did not allow Martelly to become president. And at the time, former President Préval's wife had a house in Florida and some children in school in Florida. They threatened to deport the children and take away the house. So as a result of the wife having a house in Florida and the children being in school in Florida, Préval caved under pressure from his wife and allowed Martelly to become president. So to get to your questions, Toto Constant got into the system, but at the moment, no one really knows where Toto Constant is, because the justice system that we have in Haiti that is really controlled by the USAID and U.S. Embassy in Haiti, many of the training that is being done and facilitated by the U.S., they have their hands all on that system. So Constant arrived in Haiti right now. I don't know. He was supposed to be incarcerated, but I don't believe that he is. And these individuals, they get recycled back into the community and just go sit and enjoy their lives. So another great example is Guy Philippe. In 2004, Guy Philippe was somebody that was trained also by the U.S. He participated in helping to facilitate the U.S. giving Aristide a coup in 2004. Right now, Guy Philippe finished serving his term in a prison here in the state. They look into deport him back into Haiti, but because the U.S. government and, of course, Ariel Henry, the current de facto prime minister, see Guy Philippe as a threat, the U.S. is still holding on to Guy Philippe. They have not deported him back to Haiti. So the U.S. use Haitians who, of course, are greedy, looking for the next big pots of money, who's looking for power to do the U.S. deed. But after they finish utilizing them, they just drop them to the side. And whenever they need them, they can go back and recycling them. So that goes to the very important information that I want to talk about is education. When you have a country where your education system is being controlled by other nations, you cannot build a nation. The education that we are being provided to our children must be the type of education that will help us build great citizens. And I want to go back to the 1805 constitution that Dessalines left to us as the blueprint for Haiti, which is not being implemented. In that constitution, Article 9 says, to be a good Haitian, you have to be a good son, a good daughter, a good brother, a good sister, a good husband, a good wife, and most of all, a good soldier. That constitution has never been implemented. It was pushed to the side, let alone that when the U.S. came in 1915, Roosevelt rewrote the Haitian constitution to facilitate U.S. companies to be able to purchase lands in Haiti. So had we been able to utilize the blueprint that the founding fathers left to us, we will know that as a nation, that the education we are receiving, the citizens that we are growing in that society should be people that adhere to the Constitution and adhere to the principle and be loyal to Haiti. So when your education is being based from the Christian's education system, it's being looked at from the perspectives of U.S. education system, it's being looked at from the French education system, the Haitians are not educated to be loyal to Haiti. But mind you, I mean, I'm saying it's a general statement. There are some Haitians who, after, you know, they finish with the regular education system, who go beyond what they give them in the school to understand who they are, to go back to the roots and the blueprints that our founding father has left from them. But there are some who do not go back and do that. And those individuals are easily swayed into being used to do things against the nations. And so that's why it's important in this movement as Black people to not only rely on the education that is given to our children in the school system, if we want to change our fight, if we want to change our future.
Thank you, caller. Let's go to our next caller. Caller 6057, 6057. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your comment or question, please. 6057.
Certainly. I want to thank Sister Charles for her presentation. It's very enlightening, and I had a comment and a question. Since the U.S. invaded Haiti in the early 20th century, seems that Haiti has been in a battle against neocolonialism because of the petty bourgeois elements among the Haitian people. Could you comment the ups and downs of that fight against neocolonialism that's going on in Haiti, why, and also could you go into why the capitalist forces continue to support these forces of neocolonialism, like the Duvaliers, for example?
Thank you for your questions. That goes back to some of the things that I've been saying earlier. Once you don't have control over your economy, then it's hard to move a country forward. One of the things that became a disadvantage for Haiti when the U.S. came into Haiti in 1915, they founded a decentralized system where each department was able and responsible for their people and was doing businesses and exchange. When the U.S. came in 1915, they centralized the Haitian government to make it more like a federal system. So the other department outside of Port-au-Prince, everything that they need now have to come from Port-au-Prince and rely on the budget that is being passed in Port-au-Prince. In the budget, when it is passed, very little from that budget get trickles down into the other departments to be able to respond to the need of those populations. With Port-au-Prince becoming the center of money movement, it makes it easier for the Haitian elites, the 1% of the Haitian elites that control about 48% of the country's wealth. And some of the people, we call them the Syrio-Lebanese, those are people who came into Haiti when they were having troubles in their country. And given that we are still upholding the concept that if a person is coming from an oppressed nation, we're supposed to give them house and help them get on their feet. So these individuals have become the folks who are controlling our economy, and many of them are also folks who hold passports from Canada, who hold passports from France, who hold passports from the United States. And when they do business with U.S. folks. So and both of the occupations from 1915 and the occupations that the U.S. is currently pushing forward, the letters and support have been coming from these quote-unquote business sectors who have no loyalty to Haiti, who are writing letters, who are spending a lot of money, lobbying here in Washington, D.C., asking for the force to come in to help support their quote-unquote businesses. And the business these people are doing, they basically dumping in Haiti, collect money from the population, but they invest their money outside of Haiti. Many of those bourgeoisie, they have their businesses and houses in Florida and different part of the U.S. here. They are also U.S. citizens, and U.S. is helping them protect their money. Those are the same kind of individual, along with institutions like the World Bank and the IMF, that has forced the Aristide government prior to returning him into Haiti in 1995 to privatize the government-owned entities. That privatization process was followed through by former President René Garcia Préval, who, you know, these institutions were the bulk of employment for Haitian families. Once they closed them, the Haitian government only owned a small percentage of it. The rest of it is owned by outsiders and some of these elite individuals who are controlling the economy and also monopolize the electoral systems, work directly with the U.S. through the State Department, their embassy, or the UN through UNDP and Canada to help rate who's going to become president and senators and controls in terms of economic rise. They sponsor the candidates when they are in the electoral process. Then they're after the election is done, then these individuals have to allow them to get access to money. So we, as a population, we operate on a community base, the communal system. what you will call the socialist system. We share what we have. So Haitians have always been pushing for that. But the capitalist system, once you have it, it's all about making money. They do not invest in the community. They don't build hospitals. They don't build clinics. They invest, if they invest some money in the community, it is to have control over some of the community leaders who will manipulate people and limit access to things so they can continue to have control. So to the neocolonials that give them access to our resources, one of the biggest fights we are having with the international community right now is that the U.S. sees Haiti as being in their backyard, quote-unquote, so therefore they should have a first grab at our natural resources. Petroleum is a big thing. You guys are looking at how it's being impacted after the war between, you know, when the war declared between Ukraine and Russia, the U.S. involvement. So with us having the higher reserves of petroleum larger than what Venezuela has, that's also creating problems. We still have our soils that are very fresh. Much of the golds and coppers and uranium that we have that are in the country that has not yet been harvested. So these individuals are seeing Haiti as a place where they can continue to make money. And if you look at the different places in Africa, whether it's Niger or Burkina Faso or other continent or Somalia, where we've had a lot of instabilities, those instabilities are due to the resources companies outside and countries outside these nations who are getting access to those natural resources, who come and control them and also facilitate having puppet governments into office to allow them to continue to maintain control over those natural resources. So we, as a Haitian population, we continue to fight against that because we believe the resources that are underground must be used to help develop the nations to support the populations. If a company wants to come into our nations to mine our gold, then the children who are living in that area need to be able to get access to healthcare, to get access to quality education. The contracts that are being signed by these various institutions and that is being pushed also by the U.S. government are not contracts that are beneficial to Haiti. And looking at the multinational force that's supposed to be going to Haiti that the U.S. have been pushing for the past 2 years, Kenya is not in Haiti yet, but the U.S. have already sent ships to the northeast part of Haiti with U.S. Technicians. And they go to Haiti with their map, with their engineers. They know where they're going and what they're looking for. It's all about having access to resources and keeping the money power to be to continue to fuel up their pockets. So the fight, it's important for us to get Black people here to participate and get engaged and get involved because we are doing a very strong, very difficult fight because, as you know, when these individuals who are money hungry are looking to fill their pockets, they invest money out to destroy anyone who's standing up against them and any type of governments who might not allow them access to do what they want and however they want will not be able to stay into office. So one of the challenges we are having right now is that the U.S. is not pushing or supporting any negotiation that will not allow them and their companies to be able to maintain controls over Haiti and Haiti's assets.
Thank you, my sister. Next, we'll go to caller 7236. Caller 7236. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I couldn't sit up, and I came home sitting up. But with my worker not being the alcohol or something, interfering with her, she's going to go, I know.
I hope so.
Because it's costing me a lot. The therapist came. One therapist told me point blank it was costing me a lot.
Yeah, it's costing you more than it should for sure.
And my health.
I think that caller is communicating with someone else. Let's go to our next caller, caller 4298. your comment or question. Call the 4298.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Robert Moses. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Tse Tung is his messenger for government. In terms of Caesars, Mao Tse Tung is the goat of Caesars. And so, you know, what we face with here is a revolutionary situation. We need real revolutionaries to step up and represent the interests of the masses of the people. And this sister, Sister Charles, obviously is a representative of the masses of the Haitian people and obviously represents well, knows the history, knows the struggle. And we need to find ways of getting people like that into power, whether it's by voting or as Burkina Faso and other countries are showing us, there are other ways we have to seize power. And so we have to maintain the united front against fascism. And that's why the vote is so important, and we don't reverse correct verdicts. And so I just want to encourage the sister to keep on keeping on, because the struggle is seems vast, but you know, you can see the streets are full with the Palestinian people question, and certainly all the just struggles of the people naturally support each other. And so, you know, the future is bright. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your comments. Sister Eugenia, I know your time is limited. If possible, if we could have an extension of 10 more minutes from you, we will greatly appreciate it. Can you give us about 2 more minutes if possible?
Definitely, I want to thank the brother. We got to keep the fight. I think if we don't do that, I think one of the things that's important is that nobody gives you freedom. You have to fight to take your freedom. So we can't sit and think that government is going to come and do for us. Even if we elect a government, we have to continue reminding them why we put them into office. In Haiti, we have a saying, taking the snake to school is one thing, but when you get to that school, putting that snake on the bench and having them to sit down and learn is a whole different story. So when you elect somebody into office, don't give them a vote and think that you give them a green card and stop working. You got to keep pushing.
Mm-hmm. In terms of how the Haitians view the UN, the United Nations, you know, many people see the United Nations today no more than a tool for the U.S. to push and express their interest in our power. So how does the Haitians see the UN in terms of what not, if it truly a valuable institution that should be listened to? What is your response to that?
You know, the thing is, the Haitian populations, even though we have a high level of illiteracy rate, they are the most astute individuals. They fully comprehend the politics, the geopolitics aspect that is being placed at the UN. Very few Haitians will tell you they will depend on the UN to come resolve a situation for us. We see the UN as a platform where we can go to address things, where you get a larger connection with all the other countries, but not as an institution who's coming to resolve our problems. They've had multiple missions in Haiti. They did not resolve anything. We still have cholera in Haiti as a result of the UN presence in the country. The individuals that were killed, from that mayor was mentioned in the earlier report, those families still have not received compensations. And also by inviting another multinational force to come into Haiti, you don't know what diseases they are bringing with them. And there is nothing that has been put in place through those resolutions that they have passed to establish by what criteria that these soldiers will be selected to come into the country, limiting them carrying whatever diseases that may be in the country where they're coming from, and also who's going to be responsible for what will happen if that particular disease get introduced into the country. With the cholera pandemic, we can say that the UN has not taken it into any responsibility, and they have not pay reparations to the victims from the pandemic. So as a result, we don't need them to be in our politics. If they want to help, they can provide the financial assistance, and we have the people who can do the work, but we see the UN is nothing but a face that is being used by the U.S. to channel through their imperialistic neocon politics.
And my second question to you, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this in terms of the question of how can we best aid and support our brothers and sisters in Haiti, is that would it be better if African people inside the U.S. create their own independent political party and use their power influence from that perspective than to put their trust in these two parties, the Democrat and Republican Party, which are the same two parties that have created the oppression that Haitian people are dealing with today? Your response to that narrative?
I'm gonna answer you with a simple thing. You know, when President Biden was a senator, he was doing an interview with, I believe, Charles Rose. And then during that interview, they were talking about Haiti. And he said, even if Haiti rise up 300 feet up in the air and fall into the ocean, that wouldn't change a thing for him. He wouldn't do anything to change it. So I don't know if that answers your question. So if we want to do change for ourselves, we have to pull our people, our party. These two parties are part of the system and the status quo. We've been electing parties. What changes have they brought to our community here? We only see them and hear them during election times because they need our vote. And I think that's why we as a people in this country, we need to get these people to understand that if they want our vote, before we give them the vote, we need to see action. Actions speak louder than words. We should not be taking promises from them, give them vote, and continue to just keep doing the same politics as usual. That is not acceptable. We as a black race in this country, we need to take another approach.
And my last question, so we get you out of here, is that do you see any parallels in the struggle of Haiti with the struggle that's going on today in West Africa around the various coups from Mali, Burkina Faso, and the Palestinians, the genocide that's taking place in Palestine? Do you see a lot of commonalities of what the Haitians been facing and how they are facing these same kind of forces and problems in West Africa and Palestine today?
So with the situation with Palestine and Israel, I always tell people, look at Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Israel is treated a certain way. Haiti is treated a certain way. Palestine is treated a certain way. The Dominican Republic is treated a certain way. If you wanted to make a simple comparison, you can say the U.S. treat the Dominican Republic just like they treat Israel. They treat Haiti just like they treat Palestine. Very simple. So I can give you an example. In 2001, the U.S. had sent 20,000 M16 to the Dominican Republic to protect their border against Haitians. In 2003-2004, the U.S. invested a lot of money into lobbying and in propping the DR because they saw Haiti as a quote-unquote threat for the Dominican Republic. The companies that are producing sugar in the Dominican Republic are U.S. companies. Haitian children that are being born in the Batays, whose parents have been there for over 20 years, 30 years, these children are not allowed to have a birth certificate. The Dominican Republic recently closed their borders with Haiti because we decided to continue an irrigation canal so we can grow food on Haitian soil. Mr. Abinader shut down the roads, shut down access to planes coming into Haiti, and they lined up the border with their soldiers as though we were at war with them. Mr. Abinadel has made it clear that he will not sit and negotiate with Haitian or reopen his borders until we agree to stop the construction of the canal. The construction of the canal will not stop because we are not digging in his soil. We are digging on Haitian soil. The Massacre River that is shared between the DR and Haiti, one part originated from the Habon, but that canal also have two rivers coming in from Haiti that are also fueling into that same river. We have a right to build a canal to produce food to feed our own population. The Maribao Plain, where the canal is being created right now, the U.S. had pushed to put a free trade zone in that area. The land that was taken back in 2023, that was a U.S. government push institution with the Haitian bourgeoisie that benefits the Dominican government. Because even though the clothes are being made in Haiti, they are shipped from the Dominican Republic. It is not Haitians who are benefiting from the tax. So this is a clear example that shows you how Haiti is being mistreated when it's come to the DR. When we look at what's happening in Niger and Burkina Faso, I said, liberté ou la mort, your country or death. It's the same thing Dessalines was pushing for, that Thomas Sankara is pushing for. We cannot sit and wait for France to bring independence, economic freedom to us. We must take our economic freedom. The resources that the French have been pulling from the soil in Burkina Faso, in Niger, it does not belong to them. It belongs to the population. So if the gold is on their soil, that gold must be able to sell at a market price value that allow them to build hospital, build road, provide education for their populations. I support them, and the Haitian people need to do the same.
This is Gina Yolaki. Thank you for your contribution to today's program and highlighting a special day for the history of Haiti and the Haitian people. And your final thoughts on how can they help and support your work, and how can people get in contact with you?
Every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m., I am on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. It goes out to Virginia. You can go to WPFWFM.org. You listen to me every Wednesday, and it'll provide analysis on what's going on in Haiti. The show is strictly on Haiti. It's called Combi Black Eye, so I hope everybody will tune in and listen to. I do work through Fondation Mapu, and I support education stuff in Haiti and work with local community and do public speaking and stuff. So if people want to reach out to me, my radio show's email is combitblackeyedc@gmail.com. That is KONBITLAKAYDC@gmail.com. You can reach out to me by phone. It's 301-537-8162. Thank you so much, my brother. It's always a pleasure to be with you. But I leave on this final word is that today is the anniversary of the Battle of Vetia. It was a battle that was fought for every black person. So let's remember, we need to work as a unity. We need to stand as one. We need to educate ourselves. We need to support our businesses and know that a free and prosperous Haiti is not for Haitian alone. It is for the black race. So vive Papa Dessalines.
Again, we thank you, our sister. And let's continue to communicate, organize, and fight for the total liberation and unification of our people and our motherland, Africa, and nations where African people own and control. So, sister, again, thank you. Let's stay in touch. And as we said, the struggle continues. We thank you for helping us to fill in this missing pages of history as it relates to Haiti. We thank you.
Thank you, my brother.
You have been listening to Sister Eugenia Charles, who is the organizer for the Haitian movement, She's one of the many, and we would like to encourage you to not only help to support this sister, but there are other entities and people who are doing work in Haiti that we just would like to share with you also to give your support and help to. As we mentioned earlier at the beginning of the program, the Haitian lawyers filed a lawsuit against the illegitimate Haiti government for requesting invasion into Haiti in violation of Haiti Constitution. This particular lawsuit has been organized by attorney Eva Fairfan in Haiti. You can reach out to her at 011-509-3670-3640, as well as attorney Zilly Danto in the U.S. at 203-829-7210. Let's support all the work that's been done under in the name of the liberation of our brothers and sisters in Haiti. And at this point in time, MPH Radio will take a break, and when we come back, we have a message to our community and our final thoughts for today's program, which is part one to part two, our story, our movement, and our history. We'll be right back. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
Me no want no dirty money. No, me no.
That's right. They got us living on the front line. Some of the imperialist capitalist forces that seek to dominate, destroy, and control all of humanity. Welcome back to MPH Radio. Our theme today was part one of our story, our movement, and our history. We will continue the discussion on the 2nd of December as we talk about the coups in West Africa. So join us. Put that down on your calendar. You join us 2 weeks from now, December 2nd, 1 p.m., as we continue to tell our story, our movement, and our history as we look at this phenomenon that is taking place in West Africa at the very coups. So join us. Also, you can join us if you live in the Richmond metropolitan area on every weekend on Friday, Saturday, Sunday at 1 p.m. And we feature some of our historical live TV shows that we have produced that can be viewed on Comcast Channel 36 and Comcast Channel 95 and Verizon Channel 36. So if you are living in the area or have any friends, tell them to check out our live TV show where we put some of the past programs that have been produced and learn more about our history. Because after all, we are fighting to fill in our missing pages of history. So at this point in time, we're going to close out our program with Brother Alex Joyner as he gives his commentary to and for our community. We call it A Message to the Community with Brother Alex. So Brother Alex, we're going to turn the mic over to you, and your message to the community is?
Well, again, Mr. Lee, you have given us a day that will last for me for a long, long time, because I found out some information about Haiti that I had clearly did not know. And the presenter, Mrs. Charles, did an elegant job of letting us know the situation in our brother or sister country, and one that we have been alienated by, and have country that's been told lies on and been done so horribly since the 1600s, Haiti. Those people have really suffered a lot, and they suffered because they believed in freedom. And so we have to realize that Haiti gave us a blueprint, and we need to start following the example. And one thing I would like to close out the day with, because this is so important to me, you know, we look at holidays, and holidays come and go. And we spend them with friends and family. And sometimes we don't even really know the meaning of sharing those moments together. So I would like to first give a shout out real quick to my sister Mary, who has a birthday, and my oldest brother, he has a birthday coming up next week. And say they not forgotten on the holiday, because I always got jealous because their birthday was near the best eating time of the year, which was Thanksgiving. So I would like to say that next week, many Americans will be celebrating the Thanksgiving Day holiday on November the 23rd. The White House will give a pardon to a turkey on the White House lawn, and many Americans will sit down with friends and family and enjoy a meal of abundance. Many others will be serving the needy and poor the holiday feast of great substance at the homeless shelters, food centers, and the church kitchens of all denominations. The major holiday parades will be on in the morning, followed by basketball and football games that will last well into the night. Then the stores will open at midnight for early Black Friday shopping. I sit back now, remembering the Native American student in my class who did nothing and didn't care about the holiday. She hated it and everything associated with it. We were the best of friends until that week. She watched me as I painted a paper turkey and placed a headband of bird feathers around my head, pretending to be a Native American. I never knew this hurt her until she began to cry one day. She was a descendant of the original Wampanoag tribe from Massachusetts. She sat with me doing research once and told me that her people's history was different than what we were being taught. The teachings of the holiday were mostly lies told by the European victors. Thanksgiving is every day to the Native Americans, as giving thanks is a big part of their culture. That is who the Native American is. It has been a myth which has done so much damage and harm to the cultural self-esteem of generations of Native Americans. It is a grim reminder of an unhappy time when they were in peace to share with starving colonists their harvest festival. In return, the colonists introduced the Native American to a long, bloody betrayal of lies and destruction to those who lived in America first. We have often seen in American folklore, school, and the movies about the more romantic tale of the Thanksgiving Day in America. It was a different story told by the Native Americans that the starving colonists that saved from extinction that winter. The people who often tell the stories of the conquered often leave out the truth and what really happened about the tales they write. That is why we must uncover the lies and mistruths that are spoken and placed in books that overturn the truth of our history. We must investigate the tales of the conquered as well as weigh the evidence of the victor. Then we can have a more complete idea of what truly happened. These missing pages of history must not be lost to the sands of time. A great people walked this land in America thousands of years before being invaded by the European immigrants who sought to take their land by lies, trickery, or by force when necessary. They never meant to live in peace with the Native American, as they feared they may rise against them and run them back to the ocean where they came from. Many Native Americans did not trust these new people, but saw them struggling to survive on their own, and they were moved to help them. This was the biggest mistake they made, as their love and trust was turned into widespread disease and the taking of their land by force. Nowhere in a human history has the taking of the land and two continents by many European invaders happened on such a large scale over hundreds of years. Thanksgiving is a time for family and friends to give thanks for what they have in harvest given to them by God. A time was set in 1536 by the Church of England as the Day of Thanksgiving, in which spirit, faith, and fasting was a way to share the harvest and blessing with a final thank you dinner to celebrate all God's mercy toward man to succeed in Christian life and forgiveness of others. It was for men of many nations to sit at a table of peace and give thanks to the Lord God. The first Native Americans celebrated the week and days in prayer to the Great Spirit, honoring their family, wives, and children, and sharing with other tribes. Many brought forth meat, vegetables, fruit, and homemade sweets. This was a grand time of harvesting before preparing for long, cold winters. It was something the new colonists knew nothing about as they stole or took as they pleased. The first documenter of Day of Thanksgiving was in 1619, was near present-day Charles City, County, Virginia, on the north bank of the James River near Herring Creek. It was at the settlement called the Berkeley's Plantation, which was the traditional home of the Harrison family of Virginia. This is where, after a long voyage by the good ship Margaret of Bristol, England, brought 38 settlers to the new town and 100 of Berkeley. Upon the ship's arrival, a decree was made by the London Company proprietors that on that day and all days forward, there shall be a day of thanksgiving. On December the 4th, 1619, they indeed celebrated a day of thanksgiving, establishing a tradition 2 years and 17 days before the Pilgrims arrived in Plymouth, Massachusetts, on the Mayflower to establish their Thanksgiving Day in 1621. The settlers used the food stores from the ship and sought game from the forest surrounding them, and they prayed, ate, and drank well into the night as they were safe from the long voyage and looked forward to a new life in a strange land they would now call home. The present-day Berkeley Plantation continues the tradition of Thanksgiving annually. The Winnebago tribe was localized all over Massachusetts, including Martha's Vineyards and Nantucket. They were over 100,000 strong. They were a proud people. They had a culture and lived in peace until the Europeans came. They were free and happy. They played games and moved freely among the other tribes who lived up and down the Atlantic coast. They fought with no other tribes, and all was well before European contact. Once contact was made, more than a third of the Native American population died from their diseases. The survivors still kept the European immigrants from starving and dying with the food and medicines that helped the colonists survive the harsh northern winters. These brave people who gave their lives so that others could live cannot be relegated to relics and mascots as they are today. They need assurance legally from the government that the treaties remain and are justly enforced by honest men. Their fathers were lied to after they had helped the colonists, trusting that they held honor in their words written on paper. America had broken almost every treaty it signed with the Native American, and in the past year, the Supreme Court has ruled against them even when the law was on the Native American side. This further shows the great indifference to Native American causes and past treaties. The National Day of Mourning is what the United American Indians of New England have called Thanksgiving Day since 1970. They led a protest to the area known as Plymouth Rock today. They sought to shatter the untrue image of Native Americans in harmony with their first European colonists. They believed the Puritans started an unjust system of bigotry, racism, sexism, homophobia, and war in America. The Native American side of the story, from those who want the national moral atrocity of genocide to be acknowledged, called the Day of National Gorging, the Last Supper. What is now happening on Thanksgiving Day is family squabbles, shooting, rampant drug use, theft of property, and death. This on the day of the harvest. The Friday afterwards, now called Black Friday, Americans all supposedly give thanks for all they have, are compelled on this day to push, shove, cuss, fight, and maim others as they try to be the first in line to buy things they don't use or need. The Friday after Thanksgiving Day is designated as the official day in America to pay homage to the heritage and culture of the American Indian. Many citizens of the United States have no shame as they trample over each other in stores trying to purchase goods that are overpriced and cheaply made. Through our lives, and sometimes we never enjoy simple things with our family and friends. This was not the way of the Native American. They believed in the revival of the body and spirit after working hard all year long and to give thanks and enjoy friends, family, and to have fellowship in peace. I want everyone to enjoy this week as they please, but stop and think who made the holiday possible. Remember the true story that these same Native Americans that fed the starving Europeans would later be physically assaulted, their sons and daughters sold into slavery, their land stolen, savagely killed in many massacres, and having treaties of peace and assistance never kept. Yes, it was the Last Supper for many of the Native Americans who believed they were helping their fellow men. These same men who would soon turn violent against them, trying to destroy their people, culture, and the way they worshiped. We, as a nation, must right this wrong so that the meaning of the days of the harvest feast will once again mean freedom, family, food, and fellowship throughout the land from sea to sea. And again, thank you, Brother Lee and Sister Susie and all the panel today. And I pray that you have a very abundant harvest feast next week. Thank you.
We thank you, Brother Alex, for your message to the community. We'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing us to come at home this evening to speak truth to powerful and to the powerless. And we'd like to thank our special guest, Sister Eugenia Charles of Haiti, for sharing her perspective on our story, our movement, and our history as it relates to our brother and sister in Haiti. And we would like to remind everyone to join us for part two on December 2nd, 2023 at 1 p.m. And remind all those who have skills who would like to become a member of the MPH Radio family. You can do that by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com. And if you'd like to send us some flowers to support our work at this radio, you can do that as well by Zelle. And it's Missing Pages of History 1@yahoo.com. We thank you for any support and contribution. Until next time, let's continue to fill in our missing pages of history so we will have the map that we can use for the future as relates to seeking our total liberation and unification as a people. Until next time, just remember, MPH is here for you. So is our sister, Lisa Keys. We leave you with this message.
Brought together so that we could love each other, sisters. We are. now we are here. We are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. That's why we are here. While we are here.